As a church, we've just finished a series on the 9 core practices that comprise the Bridgetown Rule of Life. And as we continue to integrate it into the shared life of our church, we wanted to provide a resource to help explore what a rule of life actually is and how we came about integrating one into our context at Bridgetown Church. So we've created a 4-part podcast that will expound on these 2 questions, providing a helpful account of where we've been and how we hope that a shared rule of life will direct where we are headed. As we often say around here, we believe the future of the church is ancient. If we desire to move forward in our identity and calling as a unified community, we need to do so having the robust foundation of a rich life with God built out of shared practice. We believe these conversations will be a helpful resource to you as you consider what a rule of life looks like in your context, and we hope you will join us for this journey as we seek to be made into God's image together. Thanks for being with me today. We are doing a series of podcasts kind of about the rule of life in general and the Bridgetown rule of life specifically. And I thought, what better people to begin this series than the 2 of you? I think people will be surprised to find out that the rule of life for Bridgetown specifically doesn't go back 6 months. It actually goes back quite a few years. And so I thought it'd be really important for our church to kind of know some of the origin story as we work this into the DNA of who we are. So maybe that's the first question, if you're open to it. I'd love to hear from each of you. Like, what is your own journey with the rule of life? Maybe whoever goes first can define it for everybody. And then how did you get to the point where collaboration with each other, you kind of met and thought, man, this guy is after the same thing that I'm after in my local church?
Maybe a quick definition of rule of life, it would be a container for sustainably holding a life of spiritual practice. So a rule of life is not a separate spiritual practice. It is a container for holding all of the various spiritual practices that make up the life of an apprentice to Jesus. We can talk about the origins of rule of life and everything, but specifically the Bridgetown rule of life, John Mark should share the first pieces of, because that started within John Mark's imagination with Practicing the Way before I showed up. But then our friendship created collaboration along the way long before there was any idea of him passing the baton to me in leading Bridgetown. So you start that story.
Yeah, Gavin, what year did we start Practicing the Way at Bridgetown? Was that 2015, 16?
Yeah, I think so.
So the end goal of that, it's a bit, I don't think of it as crazy. It's just kind of how our community is wired. But I will talk to other pastors and they will look at me a little blank face, like, because we had this kind of 5 to 8 year plan that we were beginning on. And the end goal of that, of what we called Practicing the Way, which ended up taking 5 years, was to kind of assemble all the component pieces, practice by practice, to walk people into Sabbath and into solitude and into community and into justice. And then to, as people begin to slowly integrate these practices into their life, then to put it all together at the end into like a community rule of life that would reorganize and re-architect the church around. So it was always, from day one, that was the finish line. It wasn't just, hey, we're going to do all these practices and then move on. It was, hey, we're going to do this and then assemble this rule of life together. And ironically, Tyler and I, who I think knew each other before that, but before it was ever, certainly, I think on either of our minds, even remotely on our minds, the idea of us trading jobs, or not trading jobs, but of me passing the baton to Tyler, we began collaborating on a rule of life because I had this thing in my mind. So one of the first problems you run into with rule of life is that the tiny little micro resurgence in rule of life that's happening right now at Bridgetown and lots of other places and some great books and a lot of the work I do is in that space is all being run through the grid of radical individualism, with individual people writing their own rule of life. So, Gavin, what's your rule of life? And, oh, Tyler, tell me about your rule of life.
Which is a great starting place.
It's a great starting place, yes. I mean, my whole theory is everybody has a rule of life. They just don't call it that. And it's just changing it, really. But historically, there's not really a parallel for that in 2,000 years of church history. It's not what a rule of life is. A rule of life is a communal document. It's designed to hold a community together around shared rhythms of spiritual formation. So, you know, depending on how you kind of map the origins of rule of life, some would say it's in the New Testament, and, you know, there's this whole kind of translation from way to rule as Greek becomes Latin, and there's this whole, like, backstory. But the first, like, codified rule of life is St. Augustine in the 4th century, who, when he said yes to the role of bishop in Hippo, was with the stipulation that all the other kind of vicars and pastors and leaders move into this compound together and all do life together, because he thought it was too dangerous of a job to do alone. And so they all moved in together, and they needed, like, some kind of a, let's just call it a constitution. They needed some kind of a, like, hey, this is the framework by which we will follow Jesus together in such a way that we are formed and not deformed by the potential and the pitfall of this call. And that rule of life, 1,600 years later, is still in use today in Augustinian monasteries all around the world, both the Anglican tradition and the Catholic tradition. And that was the first of many. Saint Benedict, you know, popularized it at a wider level, but that was the first of many. So, point being, rule of life has always been intentionally designed for a community. And Tyler and I began collaborating along with one other church that we were in friendship with, because I was like this crazy person who was like, I want to, like, rebuild a church around a rule of life. But I just knew that everybody would think we were a cult. And I'm like,
I remember that you specifically said it would seem less cultish if we do it together.
Yeah. So that was my pitch to these guys. I was like, hey, guys, Bridgetown's going to do this either way. But if we could do it together, then maybe people would be like, okay, it's a little less cultish, little like, well, okay, well, that they're doing it too. And they seem like thoughtful people, and they're doing it too. And, like, even if it's just like three churches, maybe it would just not seem as crazy if we were all doing it together. And so, like, I remember we had a retreat at Mount Angel, you, me, and another pastor, and we were working on this. What would it look like? What would the rule of life be? What would be kind of, you know, mandated versus invited versus how does that work in the actual life of a community to live beyond just aspirational ideas? And that was long before you ever became the pastor.
Yeah, so I was in Brooklyn working on a rule of life for the local church that I led at the time, Oaks Church Brooklyn. And we did several Zooms to kind of collaborate. We had some working documents of, like, here's what we're putting together right now, holding up against what John Mark and Bridgetown were putting together, trying to see where there were similarities and differences. And then, yeah, even the first time I ever went to Mount Angel, is I flew out here. I think about it often because I go out there sometimes now, but landed at like midnight, which was 3 a.m. in Brooklyn, and then drove to Mount Angel with the windows down when it was cold outside to try to not fall asleep at the wheel. We spent a day collaborating on this stuff. So I think that's the first thing, is it would probably surprise people to know that we didn't, you know, dream up a rule of life quickly or anything like that. It's been a long labor, and it began as a collaboration between a few churches. And then, based on the passing of the baton, everything, that was actually one of the questions you asked me was, you know, what should we do about this rule of life we've been working on together?
Yeah, because the plan was, for me, that was the end. So it should have happened originally in, like, what, January 21 or something like that, if COVID had not happened.
Yeah, and then, thankfully, I think we went on fine-tuning and continuing to collaborate, even since I've stepped in as lead pastor at Bridgetown. We've had a number of calls as Practicing the Way and Bridgetown continued to collaborate and ideate and just chip away at getting to a point where we both felt great about the practices that make up the rule of life, and then the way that we're inviting people to hold them in community together.
Yeah, I think it was really clear to me, and that as we were, part of me was really sad not to get to be a part of this moment in the life of the church, because, you know, in many ways it was like the climax in so many ways. But I thought it was really important that you and the current leadership team lead this, because I can't, you know, implement this thing and then drop the mic and walk out. You know what I mean? Because now you have to live inside this structure, live inside this architecture. And so it's crucial for you and the current, like, core group at Bridgetown to, like, really own this stuff from the inside out. And so I just could not be more happy to watch it and to collaborate.
It's great. Thank you, guys. So as you're talking, that makes me want to step back maybe even a little bit further. You're both, you know, however many years ago, lead pastoring churches. And I think about the current kind of cultural climate around Christianity and the church and ecclesiology. And it feels like the loudest buzz out there is about online church and virtual church and, like, what's next in the future. What made you both as lead pastors take a step back and go, you know what? We need something 2,000 years old or 1,500 years old. Like, I hear both of you say a lot, like, the future of the church is ancient, and I think that's really beautiful. But why? Why do you think that? And what is your hope or desire for a rule of life in the transformation of your local church? Why did that feel like an effective tool for that transformation?
You know, historically, a rule of life is always designed to combat, if that's not too aggressive of language, cultural forces that are malforming the soul and society.
It's formative and counterformative.
So, like, I was always, you know, totally confused by the mendicant orders, which would be like the Franciscans. Then that's just fancy language for the orders that don't have monasteries, because they were all originally traveling preachers. So unlike the Benedictines, who, like, built monasteries and took a vow of stability to die there, the Franciscans and the Dominicans were like, no, we're gonna, like, sell everything and go preach the gospel to people that don't know God. And combat heresy. And so I was always struck by their vow of poverty, because it feels like such an extreme reading of the teachings of Jesus. Like, I mean, Jesus is intense on money, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
But to go from Jesus' teachings to, like, a vow of non-possession felt like such an extreme step for me. But then if you realize—
the economic moment.
There's multiple things happening. There's an economic moment, as money is basically being. We're going from a barter and trade economy to a profit economy. And then the whole other backstory of, this is at the height of Christendom, where the priesthood is utterly corrupt because local parishes and bishops are now political appointments that include real estate, profit, and land. So wealthy families are buying, like, let's say I was a millionaire, I would buy Bridgetown Church's pastorate for my son to take, even if he was just a, you know, absolute disaster who wasn't even a Christian, just because I wanted the land and the intakes and the taxable income and all of this stuff. So it's so corrupt that they designed this vow of poverty. It's the same reason celibacy. People don't even realize that. Where did celibacy come from in the life of the church? It came in the 4th century when Constantine legalized Christianity and began to appoint political appointees to the bishop's role. So it was their attempt to fight nepotism, so fathers couldn't put their sons in the role. It's pretty hard to do that if you're a celibate and don't have any children.
Yeah.
And so these things get lost over time when they become a law unto themselves, but they were originally designed to specifically deal with problems that, you know, Benedictine, his vow of stability, why that order they would vow to stay in a monastery for the rest of their life, was because most monks at the time were roaming, and there were these sophists, kind of Greek Roman philosophers, that would beg for people and live off the, you know, donations of other people. And these prophets would just kind of roam from community to community, and the moment something happened that upset them, they just go to the next one. So Benedict designed this rule where, no, you're going to stay one place for the rest of your life. And it's not because all Christians should always stay in the same location until they die, and it's wrong to move. It's because they were dealing with a huge problem. So I think, you know, when we actually started what is now the Bridgetown Rule of Life and the Practicing the Way Rule of Life, we started by naming, like, the 9 statements that make up the Rule of Life. We started by just naming the 9 most powerful forces that we are trying to resist. The digital age was one of them. It's a very long answer to a simple question. In that, I think whatever we do now has to be intentionally and powerfully designed to resist the deformation of the digital age. There's almost no intentional thoughtful counterformation coming out of the American church to resist what is arguably the most impactful and monumental societal shift in the last several, at least in the last 150 years, if not in the last 500 years. Wow. So we need a new spirituality, a new mode of discipleship to Jesus that's designed for this moment. Mm-hmm. A lot of the modes that we inherited were designed for previous moments, where most people were still cultural Christians, where nobody had iPhones, where the culture wasn't that secular, where the moral gap between the teachings of Jesus and the view of most people on marriage or gender or sexuality was not that far off. So on and so forth. We need something designed for the here and now.
Mm. Yeah, I think all that's really well said. I agree with all of it. Maybe to add, I would just say there's this amazing quote in G.K. Chesterton's biography of Thomas Aquinas, where he says, "It is the paradox of history that each generation is converted by the saint who contradicts it most." Mm. And he talks about a saint being an antidote to an era, in that they are such a contradiction that they're medicine. And he's speaking about Aquinas and about an individual person. But I think that recent church history in America has been to try to reflect the culture as much as possible, thereby converting the culture, to borrow that language. And I think I would say in a really humble way, that doesn't seem to be working very well. Hmm. And it's never worked that way in church history. Yeah. Like the church has always been most formative when we were most peculiar to the world around us. And so when I look at the ancient way of Jesus, it stands as a sharp contrast to our cultural moment. Hmm. And I also think one of the tragedies of our moment in church history has been a lack of formation, like deep formation within people, that has led to dramatic and subtle hypocrisy, and I think just disillusionment for lots of people. Like, is this worth believing? Because it doesn't seem to be shaping people any different. And so there's I think a good way to acknowledge that and lean in. And of course, it's always a danger of any practitioner to overreact and swing the pendulum too far. And so I think like a practice-based way of spiritual formation must make its way back into the local church. And we must make sure that all of our spiritual practice is forming us into people of witness, because where the pendulum could swing too far the other direction is we become all about personal formation and we forget about the proclamation of the gospel to all nations. And we should not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Neither has a rule of life competed with mission throughout church history. And so I think those are the different trains of thought that I've considered. I don't think as a pastor, my aim is to try to make the way of Jesus easiest to believe for everyone around me. I think my aim is to try to keep the way of Jesus pure so that the gospel can do its work in the culture. And a rule of life is a time-tested ancient way to keep the way of Jesus pure and to form disciples. And mainly, I was living by a rule of life and being formed by it. And then we, you know, when we first started talking about this and collaborating, I don't remember someone who I don't think was either one of us, I can't remember who it was, but said, like, why don't we just try living by one together for a while and see if it's fruitful? And so, you know, for several years, we lived by a shared rule of life because we were all doing the individual thing and had found that to be fruitful.
No, we wanted that in our community eventually, but we had to, it's got to be in our body first.
And so I think probably the most honest answer I can give is I've just been really shaped by living by a rule of life with some other people. And And I want to share that with everyone I know who follows Jesus that has an appetite for the same thing.
Mm. I love that. I love that what we're looking at is not simply a church program or a new thing to bring people in the doors, but it's a way by which we actually are hoping for and aiming for our people to be formed generations to come. And what we're looking at is what you guys were saying, it's formation and counterformation. It's mm-hmm. making us to be resilient disciples in the society around us and the culture mm-hmm. around us. And I think it's really beautiful. And that's one of the things I've appreciated about Bridgetown for many years is that what you were just saying, we don't oftentimes go, all right, everybody, let's try this together without having behind the scenes tested and tried it among our team or our elders or at a staff level or community leaders level. And I love that this is one of those gifts. So not only does the conversation go more than 6 months back, but the practice of it goes way further than that as well. And I'm excited about it and the transformation that it has to offer to our people. I've been living by the Bridgetown Rule of Life now for a while and really believe it. I really believe what the Lord is doing and will do through it in our people. So I'm really grateful for kind of the long journey you guys have been on. And that actually brings up maybe a final question for us today. A lot of your journeys have, from what you're talking about, have run parallel to each other. A lot of similar experiences. You're both lead pastors. I'm wondering, in this collaboration, how did you challenge or shape one another's kind of vision of, you know, John Mark, if you were to build this Rule of Life just by you, what did Tyler bring into that that challenged you to grow in one area? And Tyler, similar, like you both personality have bent, and even in charism, what the Lord has called you to, have different bents. So how has that collaboration expanded this Bridgetown Rule of Life as far as we have to offer it to the church?
Mm. Yeah, there's two primary ways that you've moved me, John Mark. One is, I think what you were sharing before about understanding the effect of the digital age on people, I think I've never been like a huge addict to my screen kind of person in comparison to those around me.
Right.
Like social media, that's never been a big pull for me. And so I think I've thought mostly, probably ignorantly a lot, I probably don't need to think super hard about this. I never would have said that out loud, but I think I've behaved that way some. And I think that understanding the way that distraction is working on and changing my imagination, and the way that there are practices in the way of Jesus to combat that and to shape my imagination into what I want it to become has profoundly influenced different practices that I hold. And I feel like that was a drum that you've been beating a lot harder than I have for a long time. And there are some spiritual practices that you don't know are going to be super formative for you until you do them for a while.
Hmm.
And then you start to realize, like, wow, this is changing me.
Hmm.
And I like the way it's changing me. I feel I'm becoming more joyful. I'm becoming more present. And a number of the more contemplative practices that are aimed at cultivating the imagination and keeping me present have been really helpful to me because I'm not someone who's constantly scrolling social media, but I am someone who's constantly living in the future and planning the next thing and things like that. And so I needed those practices, not primarily to keep me off social media, but I needed them, and I needed to begin practicing them to experience that. And then the other way, I think, is John Mark, you have been so thoughtful and shaped by practices of slowing, and I am active. And I come from an super active, energetic family of origin on either side. And that is a trait, like an abnormal amount of energy and productivity is a trait that is celebrated in our culture. And so there are some addictions that are frowned upon at any cultural moment and others that are celebrated. And I think like the generational things most wrong with me happen to be celebrated and often praised in our culture. And I have been so served by practices that slow me down because of what I said before, because of joy. Because practices that slow me down make me more present to people. They make me more relational and less efficient in the way that I live my everyday, more present to people. And that's where I experience joy in life. And yet it is not where the lies that I believe deepest in my gut lead me. And so daily practice is sort of giving God space to untangle some of my deepest lies that I've believed through experiences I've had in my life and have come through my bloodstream, my generational history. And a lot of that's come through John Mark.
Wow, it's awesome.
Yeah, I have this really vivid memory, Tyler, when we were outside that house in Carmel with a bunch of other pastors, and we had articulated this. We were kind of workshopping a rule of life that we were going to live by. This would have been, I don't know, how long ago? 5 years ago, at least.
It was before COVID.
Yeah, before. Who knows? It's all a blur. Yeah. And I remember one thing that I think it was you or somebody put on the table was an hour a week with the poor. And I remember thinking, I don't want that. I don't have time. I'm just on his answer.
Yeah.
I'm too busy for that. Sorry, can it be an hour a month, you know, or whatever? But, and so I think that's one area you've really shaped. And your theology of not just serving the poor, but becoming kin with people across the table. And the end goal is not just to check a box and I, you know, volunteer at the Salvation Army once a month. It's to actually cross those boundaries of relationship and make family together, which is way harder and less in our control. And the other area I think I've been really shaped by your spirituality would be the muscle you have around intercession. Like I have a strong, like, contemplative bent, you know, very strong commitment to daily prayer. But I can go days without asking Jesus to do anything in my life, which is really bad, especially if you read the teachings. Most of Jesus' teachings on prayer are all about asking. They're not about just sitting. And I think both matter. But every time I'm around you, Tyler, even last night, you know, we're driving around to get pizza after church last night, and you're just talking about some things that you've been praying and some answered prayers and some things you're specifically holding before God. And I need to be around that because I'm like, oh, immediately what that does to you, you're like, oh, what? Wait, I have huge problems in my life right now. Am I even praying about them? Am I even intentionally fasting and praying and asking God to do things? So I think that's goes to why a community rule of life is so important.
Yeah.
Because left to our own devices, the rule of life we craft will be preference-based spirituality.
That's good, yeah.
So we will design a devotional life for our personality matrix, and that's what our rule of life will reflect.
Right.
What a community rule of life should do is it should create enough space. There should be enough structure, enough space for you to kind of express it through your own personality, your own stage of life. Hey, I'm an extrovert, or I'm an introvert with two little kids, or I'm an extrovert empty nester, or whatever. And enough structure that it moves each of us out of our kind of narcissistic comfort zone into the growth edge in our formation, which for some people is going to be slowing down. For other people, it's going to be kind of speeding up a little bit, not speeding up, but like beginning to have a more generative life. For some people, it's going to be more, you know, action and service. Other people, it's going to be more silence. And we need that. Otherwise, this just becomes a Christianized form of narcissism, which is, of course, not our intention. But it happens, and the enemy's always at work to denude kind of our own journey with Jesus. And so that's why I think a community rule of life, it can hopefully hold space for each of us to have our own spiritual journeys and our own kind of personalities before God, but yet hold a community with an intentional life architecture of counterformation to the forces of the world that would just absolutely steal our time. I mean, we live in a world where it has never, ever, ever been easier to waste your life and to live just a reactionary life, you know. And these, the things that we're talking about here are not in, there's a healthy kind of tension, but it's like a weight training kind of healthy tension, not a bad tension, you know. There's that saying in the contemplative tradition, that the opposite of contemplation isn't action, it's reaction. So the opposite of a contemplative life is not, hey, I'm an active social justice, hardworking, mm-hmm. generative, pastoral, whatever. The opposite of a contemplative life is you're reactive. You're just on your phone and responding to the tyranny of the urgent, doing this next thing and following this fad and this fad and this trend and this thing and just getting sucked into the busyness. That's the opposite of a contemplative life. A contemplative life slows you down, tunes you to the presence and the peace of God and to the direction of the Holy Spirit, and then sends you out to then embody the love that God is depositing into your inner being. Mm-hmm. So formation and a life of witness are not two separate things that need to be balanced. They are the same thing in different moments in this cycle that you go round and around and around.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, one final thing to say about the strength of a communal rule of life is that not just my experience, but what I've watched a lot of people experience over time is it's often the spiritual practices that come least natural to us that become the most sacred pathways. And I don't know why that is. I suspect it's because we find ourselves most able to receive the love of God in these places that maybe we buck against in terms of our personality structure or something at first. But if you enter into a communal rule of life where you experience tension in the early days, quite often will become the sweet spot between you and God if you remain committed and practice. And that takes trust. It takes trust in God and trust in a community. And it takes humility that I can't, in my own self-reflection, in listening to the whisper of the Spirit, craft a well-rounded, perfect plan for my own formation. This requires the tension that community brings.
And I think that's why this has been a, whatever you want to call it, a 7-year journey for the church is this is slow work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of my deep pain points with, you know, practice-based discipleship is people give up so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I think of how Sabbath is just like this anchor. The disciplines are not the spiritual life. They just make space for the spiritual life. But Sabbath is like this weekly treasure and gift that I'm just, oh, for our whole family. But what people don't realize when often they hear me talk about my joyful experience of Sabbath is it probably took us 10 years. No, we stumbled our way in. We had no teachers, no mentors. You know, I started literally by reading a book by Heschel, who's not even a follower of Jesus. So it took us years. My wife was not remotely on the same page. It took us a long time to get into, to really find the joy. I'm not saying it will take you 10 years. But, you know, I will hear people try it for a few weeks, and they're like, oh, I didn't like it. It's too da-da-da-da-da. And then they just move on. It's like, oh, no, this is a long, slow journey. You know, I'm thinking of that Belshazzar line, patience is the basic constituent of Christianity. And he argues that all sin is an essentially an expression of impatience, a desire to not wait. And I think the more we can embrace this patient, slow, we're not in control, we're just making ourselves available, the more we can take that posture and move slowly together over time. Everything in the natural world that's good is slow for the most part. What's fast? Hurricanes, avalanches, mudslides, floods. Most oak trees are really slow. Mountains, incredibly slow. Most of the best things are really slow.
It's beautiful. Guys, I am so grateful for your time and your insight, and particularly why we wanted to start this journey with this conversation is over the years, I've seen the way that these practices and this rule of life and the rules of life you've lived by, the Spirit has used them to shape each of you. And so I didn't want you to just be here as practitioners. I wanted that, and you gave me a lot of that, which was great. But I also want to end by saying I've seen what you've tasted in the fruit of the rule of life and the practices. And my hope as a pastor at this church is that that will only grow and continue and spill over onto others who take part as well. So thank you for your time today. We will continue our series talking with a church historian and a pastor and a spiritual director, but I wanted to begin here at the root of this conversation to talk about that, because I think in the years to come, we're going to see a lot of fruit. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Gavin, for your leadership in life.
Our hope is that as you've listened to our conversation, the Spirit was stirring a desire in you for some piece or part of what we've talked about. If that's you, we'd invite you to engage the Rule of Life through one of three invitations. First, consider taking a deeper dive into one of the practices by going through our Practicing the Way courses. Next, consider exploring and integrating various practices by joining a Bridgetown community. And lastly, if you have already cultivated most of the practices into your life, consider becoming a part of our covenant community, a group of people committed to the long, slow, formational journey of paying attention to how the Spirit uses these practices to form us. You can find more information on any of these invitations at bridgetown.church/rule.